This episode of The Breakfast Dish is brought to you by Pod Power. With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout out to...
High Level Hip Hop. CJSR presents High Level Hip Hop. It's a deep dive into Edmonton's hip hop scene and the artists helping shape it. And the show takes a unique approach to introducing listeners to the OGs and young bloods of Edmonton hip hop scene. I shouldn't be saying that, but I am. It's scripted. The show is aimed at those who love local music, but might not have had a chance to fall in love with the city's surprisingly diverse hip hop scene.
Each episode features an interview with a local artist, plus a fresh track they recorded at CJSR. Check out episodes with Arlo Maverick, Please Be Nice, and more throughout the season. High Level Hip Hop is produced by CJSR, Edmonton's campus and community radio station. Download it wherever you find podcasts and at highlevelhiphop.transistor.fm.
Listen, I nail young bloods, but someone needs to teach me how to say OGs.
What is an OG?
I think it means original gangster.
Oh, that's me.
Tell me your dreams over bacon and eggs. We'll share a laugh and a story and even a wish on the breakfast dish. Bop, bop.
Well, we said season three is going to be more loosey-goosey.
Yeah, I listen, as the producer, I wanted it to be a little bit more tight goose than this.
Tight goose.
A little more ship-shaped Gosling.
Sorry, producer. Sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Cork. I will do better next time.
Get into the intro. What do we do here?
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Season 3 of The Breakfast Dish, the podcast that I, Karen Johnson-Diamond, host with my son, Griffin Cork. Griffin, what do we do in this podcast?
Yeah, you know how some people have like a normal voice and like a business phone voice? I think we've developed maybe a podcast voice. I think it's somewhere in the middle between the two. Anyway, I'm Griffin. Hi.
I think you sound like you. Do I not sound like me?
There's some way that you say good morning that it's become very consistent over 53 episodes.
It's 8:30 in the morning. Hey, everybody.
Oh, my God. You ate 7 packs of cigarettes before saying that.
I think podcasts would be a little bit different if you actually had to, like, wake up, like, and in bed do it the second your, like, eyes kind of opened. Ooh. Like, wouldn't that be an interesting idea for a podcast that, like, you literally hit the button on your alarm and you open the computer and you go. And you don't get any warm-up time. You can't have a shower. You're just like, I am what? I just had the most fucking crazy dream. Like,
I am hungover, like, beyond belief.
Oh, my God, I really have to pee.
This weird urgency and like... liminal state between sleep and the real world.
Some would say a podcast claiming to call themselves The Breakfast Dish and, you know, signifying an early morning time would maybe always try to record early in the morning, but sometimes we record at 6 p.m. at night, and I guess we're kind of crazy. Yeah. if we start recording in the morning.
Sometimes I'm not up till 6 p.m. at night, and that's when I'm having my breakfast.
Karen.
If I had known that was an option, we would be doing this tonight. That's ridiculous. That's insanity. No. You know what?
I'll be in my trailer.
No, it's fine. It was my own assumption, but now I'm going to crack open some caffeine.
Do it.
And
nice. I'm going to crack open some soda water.
I'm in my uncle's house and I didn't know where his drinks are. So let's just put Karen, add in a can sound here. Quick, Karen.
Wait.
Okay. All right. We're getting there.
You're in Sherwood Park, though, so I imagine that all things that you crack open sound like a moose. Like, that's what I think of as Sherwood Park. Meese? It's just like, everything is a moose or an elk or like
Is Sherwood Park known for meese?
No, I actually don't even, I don't, like, know anything about Sherwood Park, but I imagine, like, a moose. That's all I think
it's
of.
It's a big assumption.
I've been there.
There's been moose in my mom's backyard, so that's, she's on an acreage outside Sherwood Park, but is it meese? Is really the plural of moose meese?
There's no way.
I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up. Karen, tell me what we do in The Breakfast Dish.
It's got to be moose.
Well, you're looking up the plural of moose. I'm going to introduce our fabulous guest Because the best thing about season three is now we're just talking to people for fun because we want to talk to them. And if they have something coming up, excellent. We're going to pitch it for them. But mostly we just want to talk to people who make us giggle so hard in the morning. And that today would be Jamie Dunstan, Artistic Director of Verb Theatre and Calgary Young People's Theatre. Good morning, Jamie.
Hi.
Hi. Let's put on our podcast voices. Good morning, Jamie.
Hi, Karen. Thanks so much for having me.
Really good to have you here with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Hi, I know it's a quiet show, but I'm coming in here with some loud facts. There's some hack website, dictionary.com, that says the plural is moose, but I'm going to look for other sources. There's no way. Try urbandictionary.com.
So can I tell you, the last time I did this with you folks was like a test. I did a test run one of these before you guys launched this thing. And that was back when we were figuring out Zoom, if I recall, and ours got hacked. Remember in the early days of Zoom hacking? Yep. We got porn hacked or whatever that was called.
Yeah.
And
that happened to us twice?
Yeah, it happened to us twice.
It was a very special time.
And the thing is, I can't remember if ours was real porn or anime porn, but one of our hacks was anime porn.
No, I remember this. This has been branded into my brain. Our call with Shay and Kiana had My Little Pony porn, which is something that, you know, I heard rumblings that existed, but I didn't want to think was true.
It wasn't actually My Little Pony Poner. It was just Anna Kummer, who is a voice of one of the My Little Ponies, just popping in for a second and leaving.
That's right. Popping in, winking, leaving.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Oh,
Carrot.
What's your best Anna Kummer? You're related, aren't you?
We must be by third or fourth generation related, because her last name is Kummer. My mum's maiden name is Kummer. And both of our families have a Saskatchewan background and a Philadelphia Dutch background, whatever the hell that means. But we've decided that some way we have some sort of connection.
Also, Jamie, I really appreciate you giving her the benefit of the doubt, but that was her best Anna Kummer. That was it, what she just did. The weird pony sex sounds. I guess that was it.
You can't do Anna Kummer. No one can be Anna Kummer that isn't Anna Kummer. I love that we've invited you on the podcast to talk about other people. Here's the thing. The reason Jamie was our test subject on the very first breakfast dish, and in fact, it was a blue light breakfast dish test, because Verb Theatre was the spark behind the beginning of the Breakfast Dish podcast, because right at the beginning of Stay Away From Each Other times, Verb Theatre had an online theatre festival and asked if we wanted to participate. And we went, let's take the Breakfast Dish online to become a video thing. And we did that.
Now, hold on. I want to clear that up. We didn't have a thing to bring to the breakfast. They were like, do you want to come join the festival? And we were like, sure.
You took Karen's proclivity for going out for breakfast with people and took that online.
Karen's breakfast queendom.
Yeah,
that's right. And so Jamie was our first test guest, and then it just took off from there. So now here we are almost 2 years later, thanks to you there, Ms. Jamie Dunstan.
I can't believe that amount of time has passed. This is just the worst stupid time.
It seems crazy. I've been thinking about that quite a bit. It seems crazy that my brain is both reflecting on how long it's been and also compartmentalizing the time of we're past it. trying to elongate and put all this time in a box to shove in the back of my mind palace.
We've gone through so many waves of this. We went from oh my God, is this happening? To wait, is it still happening? To that, we got really bored of it too quick. Do you remember? It was summer of 2020 where we're oh, we're so tired of hearing about how unprecedented this is. Stop saying pivot early on. We got fatigued fast by this pandemic. And I think we were good thing it's going to be done soon.
Jamie's flipping her hair while she says that.
Sorry. Shit, man. I can't act if there's no me.
I can't act if there's no voice. Me. Write a book, Jamie. That's really good.
It's because, I hate my voice. I actually hate my voice. It's I find it an impossible tool of my body. I'm so sad that that's all people are hearing right now.
I love your voice, but I hate my own. So
yeah.
Raise your hand out there, listeners, if anyone out there actually goes, yeah, when I hear myself on tape, I sound great.
And now put it down, because you're in a Sobeys.
Yes, this pandemic is forever. Remember when everyone liked Dina Hinshaw?
Oh, I know. People were buying t-shirts. Yeah. I wonder how many of those Dina Hinshaw shirts are still kicking around.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so flip-floppy. This province is flip-floppy. Let's not talk politics. Boo. Let's talk to Jamie.
Boo.
Jamie, because this season's podcast is about anything and everyone, we want to talk to about anything. Tell me what your earliest memory of life is. Your very, very first memory.
Wow.
Oh, that's a good one. I have some memories from very early that may or may not be memories. Like they might be in that funny, like apparently some child psychologists say there is no way you can remember anything before the age of like 2.5 or something like that. I don't remember what the exact age is, but like there's literally no way you can do it. And yet I somehow remember, and whether this was a dream or not, or whether I actually remember something of this, I remember being in a car seat. And now that might seem like not an age determining thing now, but in the 80s, being in a car seat meant you were a baby. And I remember being in a car seat and going to the movies with my sister, who was in my head, like 3. So I would have been like 1.
Wow.
Going to see, and I'll do you one better, going to see a rescreening of Lady and the Tramp.
Whoa.
Can that be true? Who knows?
Okay.
But that's what I remember.
I'm sure I've talked about this on this show before, but that is also one of my earliest memories, is in Karen's old burgundy van, Red Runt. I'm being buckled into a car seat, which is less age defining for me because I think my parents kept me in a car seat far too long. But
till you were 14,
yeah, it was too small.
He's in one right now. It's changed. It's like, because in the 80s, you stopped at like age 2 or 3.
Right.
Like you just sat in the back seat and you didn't have seatbelts and it was a different time.
I remember being buckled in front of the house that my parents were living in right now, like the house that I grew up in, which means we didn't move there until I was like 3 or 4. But it's your dad, mom, Dennis, Bumpa, buckling me in. And I think Nomi's behind him. And that's my earliest memory, I think. There's part of me that totally believes that you can't, like you're not making memories until 2.5.
Yeah.
I totally buy that.
I fit the mold because my earliest memory is being 6 years old and peeing my pants because I didn't make it to the bathroom on my grandma's back porch. So
what do you mean fit the mold? Sorry.
I don't remember anything before 6.
Oh, I see. Right. The pee pants was so traumatizing that it activated your long-term memory.
Well, it kind of was.
I wonder if you can tell something about a person based on whether their first memory that they have is like traumatic or like joyful.
I peed my pants. and her entire subconscious awakened.
It was one of those things where I was like at the playground and I knew I had to go and I didn't want to leave the playground, but I didn't. And I ran and ran and ran back to my grandma's house. And then we were living in her basement at the time. And I, for some reason, felt like I had to ring the bell and I couldn't just walk in. And I ring the bell and that was just 1 second too long.
I did the same thing, but I was 11.
Maybe you wanted to. Maybe it wasn't a traumatic memory at all. Maybe this is a joyful memory. Maybe this is something you wanted to do.
Right.
What can I make my grandma deal with this morning?
Really stick it to old Gam Gam.
This episode of The Breakfast Dish is brought to you by ATB. Hosted by Todd Hirsch, ATB's Financial Vice President and Chief Economist, the Future of Podcast has launched its 3rd season.
By connecting with industry leaders to uncover what's on the horizon for the things that mean the most to you, the Future of Podcast promises to give you insights to help navigate what is often an uncertain future.
Explore how our economy and communities can not only brace for change, but embrace the opportunity it creates.
Subscribe to The Future of in the Apple Store, Google Play, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts are found, and connect with them at ATB.com/thefutureof. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast, The Breakfast Dish.
Okay, that was my random question, Griff. Do you have any random questions for Jamie?
Hey, if you had to be a specific kind of snake, what kind of, like, I'm thinking like a garter or a boa constrictor or a cobra or a viper. And I don't actually know how a viper differs from those other 3 that I said, but, you know, pick one.
I would want to be like a sea snake.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
So my childhoods were spent, and the summers were spent at the Okanagan Lake, because that's where my family is from. And the images of the Ogopogo monster in the lake were always kind of snaky. So that's what cool. I'm imagining. I would like to be the Ogopogo.
Oh, man.
Okay. Griffin, if you could be any mythical creature, monster, what would you like to be?
Chimera.
I don't know what that is.
I'd want to be you don't know what a chimera is?
No.
Okay. It's a kind of a weirdly nerdy joke because it's also a mix of a few different animals. I think there's an adjective that's called chimerical, which is just means like a whole mix of different things. What I think I know it to be is the head of a lion with also the head of a goat and the tail of a snake. And then I don't remember what the body is, but it's funny because a griffin is also an animal combination. And actually, that's my time on the show. Thanks you guys so much. The requisition has been really funny and fun for me to be on, and ciao.
Did you know there's a thing called chimerism in humans, which is people who I think they were twins in utero, but kind of the twins, you know, melted into one, but they were fraternal twins. So like a male and female twin, and they melted together into one. So you can have one person with some cells that are male and some cells are female. And that's like the closest thing you can get to human hermaphroditism. Like that's the closest thing you can get to it, which is some of your cells are female, some are male. So you could have potentially both sets of organs, and not fully. I don't think it ever happens fully. It's an intersex condition that's pretty like out there.
I love that your random question, Griffin, has led us into the perfect segue to talk about the show that you're doing, Jamie.
I don't know what snakes I have in my brain. I have to go to a doctor.
No, it did. It went snakes, Ogopogo, mythical creatures, chimera, and then intersex.
No, I agree it worked out. I'm saying the origins is troubling.
Well, Jamie, this is a season where we get to talk to anybody about everything, but Griffin and I both saw this show that you are doing last year, but it sure as hell wasn't.
Yeah, it's 2020.
At the High Performance Rodeo, right? It was part of the rodeo. And the High Performance Rodeo is remounting?
It's One Yellow Rabbit presenting Verb's production of Bliss. So One Yellow Rabbit has always been really, really supportive of this project. Early on, when I pitched this to them, it had very little to it. It was just a pitch. And they said, yes, we'll support it. And we did it in the rodeo and it kind of did well. So they wanted to bring it back. And so One Yellow Rabbit thought it would be a great way for them to sort of re-welcome their audiences in before the 2022 rodeo starts.
Right.
And it's a bit of a way of, I think, launching their 2022 rodeo and a bit of a tester of okay, well, our audience is interested in coming back to things right now and the kinds of things that OYR does. So, yeah.
Awesome. Do you want to tell us about the show?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, is this the spoilers version of the show or the non-spoilers version?
Hell yeah. Backstage. Freaking all spoilers all the time.
Okay. So this is the spoilers part. So if you haven't seen the show and you're going to see the show, turn this off now and listen to this.
This ain't your grandma's podcast. You better watch out. There's a whole lot of plot points in here.
Yeah. This ain't your grandma's podcast. So, Bliss, the birthday party play, is a play I wrote. It's a birthday party put on stage, and it's me sort of recounting sort of the trajectory through my life of curiosity, the idea of curiosity throughout my life, and how when I was a really little kid, everything was just sunbeams and stardust, and I just wanted to know everything. And then as you get older, you start to learn things you don't want to know, and the examples I use in the show are things like you find out about Santa Claus, and you find out about death, and you find out about all these things that kind of make some kids like me, not all kids, some kids a little bit afraid of learning, or at least learning things that might seem a bit dangerous. And sort of and I think we know a lot of adults like that, if there's a topic that seems dangerous, they'll just turn off their brains. You know, I think a lot of people have that about climate change. People don't want to believe in climate change because that means their entire life has been contributing to the downfall of the planet. And that means that they might have to change. And anyway, so I sort of chart this into the concept of willful ignorance. And as I use this personal story as a way of cracking this open and sort of finding a turning point in my life, which is when I was 26, going on 27, my parents told me that I had XY chromosomes, like male DNA. So that's like not something I wanted to know at the time. Wasn't super interested in that, and had to go through a bit of like a, I don't know, a reconceptualization of how we live curious lives, and how that can be a good thing. Yeah. Like in the moment, it can feel like your entire world is being flipped upside down, but how you can reawaken parts of you that you didn't even know you had once you dip into the unknown. Yeah. So that's what it's about. Sort of my, and like, it's a bit of my journey as an intersex person, as a person who is like kind of in this weird middle zone between being male and female and is either or both or neither, depending on how you think about it. And yeah, that's what the show is. And it's sort of it's a birthday party and there's cake. That's the play.
There's cake.
That's the play.
Isn't that terrible? Yeah. Like, yeah, that's what I remember. The cake. Yeah. No, that's
yeah.
It's not what I remember.
Well, it's funny because a lot of people remember different things about that show. Like, and again, this is the spoilers version, so I don't mind talking about it. But like, yeah, there were lots of people who left that show being like, I don't think that's true. And that was really fascinating. Like a lot of people didn't believe the story I told. And I was like, oh, okay, that might be something dramaturgical in the play that I need to work on. But I think it was also for some people, they didn't want to believe it.
Really?
You know, like...
Well, the construct of the play is that might be true, or maybe I just lied to you, or maybe I just lied to you then. So it's... That's what I loved about it.
Yeah, there's a device in it, yeah.
We left curious. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, yeah. And but I was amazed how many people chose not to leave curious. Some people still chose to be like, no, she was definitely lying. Like, she definitely made that up. Like some people made up their minds pretty quickly and they tended to be people who were a little bit older, I will say, people who maybe might be still struggling with wrapping their heads around like gender as binary and non-binary concepts. Right. And not to dismiss them, their experience at all, but just maybe people who like looked at me and couldn't reconcile this concept, you know, because I don't look particularly masculine by traditional standards, you know, and that's, I think that's a confusing thing for some people. So,
well, yeah. I remember leaving, talking to you after the show and going, well, okay, which part was true? Like what, yeah. Which was the lie? And you went, do you want to know? And yeah. I went, no, I don't want to know. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Like it, I loved that you gave me the choice of, do you want to, do you need to know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy to tell people. I'm sort of okay with that now and that's fine. But yeah, some people really like not knowing.
Yeah,
I really like not knowing. I also like the element of the idea of reintroducing the element of like discovery and curiosity at kind of any stage of your life.
That's and really it definitely lovely. Changed me. And I like for people who were working with me at around that time, they saw a difference in my art. Like it changed after that. I think my art until then had been very safe, had been work that I had seen and liked or scripts that I liked because I had read them. And after that, I was dipping into things like, all right, like, what if we do a musical for deaf people, you know? So like, I think my entire world got a little more playful after that, which was really great.
Oh, lovely. And you know, speaking of playful, I went to see my first show back in a theater after, well, in the middle still of stay away from each other times, but after 20 months of not going into a theater and seeing a show, I went to see a more sparkling version of ourselves, the play that Verb Theater did at the beginning of this season, Ali DeWright and Daniel Fong. And it was the perfect show to go see after 20 months of not seeing theater. Like it kissed slightly the idea that we are back after COVID. Like it just kissed it slightly, and the rest was just refreshing. It was chimerical. That's what it was.
Chimerical.
It was chimerical. It was a mix of so many different things, and I laughed, and I cried, and I thought, and I, but it was so, it was not precious, I guess is the word I want, but in the same way, it was totally precious because we were back in the theater, but you managed to do that without being all like, oh, we're back in the theater. Like, it was just, I just remember Ali DeWright and Daniel Fong leaning down to kiss the stage.
Yeah. I'm glad you say that. It's funny because I'm usually the person who the last thing I want to see is a show about theater, and the more sparkling version of ourselves is very much a show about doing theater, and I always try to avoid those. But this was my like, I feel like I want to talk about something, you know, like I feel like I want to do something for our people as we come back, and
you didn't even have to be our people.
No, a lot of people saw it who weren't our people, and enjoyed it. But it came from an impulse of like, you know, I think so many of us have had to question so much in this time away, and how do we move forward, and do we want to move forward, and can we do better?
There's a lot of conversation right now about how do we reimagine what the rehearsal process looks like now that we're back, and how can we change it, and how can we make it easier, better? I don't know. I think there's an expectation that everything has changed during the time we were away, or everything should have changed. But
yeah,
everyone was dealing with so much other stuff while we were away. Thinking changes for the future was not on the bill. I think the bill was,
oh, I know,
dealing with the shit right now.
There have been so many movements during this,
yeah,
this pandemic. And I will say I have a lot of sympathy for the producers out there, the artistic directors and the producers and the executive directors, because like none of us can make change when we can't make theater. You know what I mean?
So
like,
true.
A lot of us are struggling to keep our companies alive. There are companies that didn't last this pandemic that will not come back. So I appreciate the community looking for change, but I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding maybe, or a lack of awareness about like just how little resources every one of our companies are actually working with here, and how desperately we've been scrambling to stay alive. And so, you know, yeah, I do appreciate the like, we want to come back to something better, but like from my end as a producer, I'm like, I just want to come back. Like, I want to make sure we can come back. Yeah. My goals are so much simpler right now. And I want change as well, but I think we need to create some awareness here that like many of our institutions are on very precarious ground right now.
I spoke to a executive director of one company who said that through this entire thing, every time they had a board meeting, they had to present three budgets.
The one budget
mm-hmm. is, what if we could start again tomorrow? What if we could start again in 4 months? What if we have to wait till next season to start?
That's right. At Calgary Young People's Theatre, in the early part of the pandemic, I think I had four budget sheets open, and they wanted mid, high, and medium levels of disaster scenario. And then also like, what if we suddenly, everything's okay suddenly? Like, yeah, it was all over the place, and it was so much work, and it wasn't the fun work. So
no.
Like, you know, like it's not the thing you go into theater for, is to be building spreadsheets. So it's, I have a lot of respect for the producers who have made it, who have got their companies through to this point. What I would like to see is a little more investment in like community. I would like to see, especially the local community. I feel like our local community is kind of hurting a bit, and I would like to see the producers investing in this place. Cause we all know many of us have friends who will not come back. Yeah. They've had to find other work, and that work is steady. They can't risk losing it.
Yeah.
What's been really great for me to see sometimes is in the, all the kind of tumultuous change that happened in this period, there have been a few companies that have like completely changed leadership. So in this very unstable time, there's been three or four companies that have brought in new people, and they go, okay, and now you figure it out. Like, here's a little pile of, and now you untangle this headphone cord of a company. You know what I mean? Like, that's... yeah. I can't even imagine doing that at this point.
The most senior person at one of our city's theater companies has only been there for like 4 months. Like,
yeah,
that's how tight things are. Anyway, yeah. So I'm sparkling was fun. It was fun to do something that was just sort of a welcome back, and fun to do like stupid shit on stage. You know what I mean? Like, just, I feel like I can never earn bubbles on stage. I always want bubbles on stage, and there's no play that earns them.
Except like a more sparkling version of ourselves.
So I had to put them in. But like I can't think of a single play that actually earns bubbles. And I keep trying, and no one wants them.
Is it because, sorry, what do you mean it earns bubbles? As in the bubbles are too high status for
you? No, because, okay, so think about a bubble machine for a second. First of all, bubble machines are super easy to come by. You can get them at freaking Toys R Us. Okay. bubble liquid is very cheap. So why do we have this beautiful thing and we never use it? On stage, we use fog all the time on stage. We use strobe all the time on stage. We use water all the time on stage. We never use bubbles. Why is that? It's because no play wants bubbles. What, right. Where does that, why? Like maybe Wicked would use bubbles. Maybe like, yeah. Wizard of Oz, maybe in that Glinda scene, but that's kind of it. And so trying to find a script, every time there's any reference to like underwater stuff in a play that I'm working on, I'm always like, should we hit this with bubbles?
We probably have to do, we haven't talked about it yet, but we have to do bubbles, right? Like no one said it, but I'll be the
No one said one. It, but like, I'm assuming. And so for years, I've been trying to get bubbles into a show, and I have not succeeded.
This is The Breakfast Dish officially calling out the designers of Vertigo Theater, Sherlock Holmes, and The Case of the Vanishing Thimble. I don't want to see a single piece of haze. I want it all to be bubbles.
The stage is just, like, slippery. Everyone dies.
That might be the reason that nobody wants a bubble machine in their play.
Maybe.
For people that didn't get the chance to see a more sparkling version of ourselves, and I really hope it comes back, Jamie. The concept was, if you get back to theater, since we're back to theater, let's do all the things we wish we could have, we've never been able to do on theater. So let's hold a seance. I've always wanted to slap somebody on stage. I've always wanted to ride a bike on stage. And I was surprised that there was no, you know, appearance of Neil Diamond, because my want was I've always wanted to, you know, be with Neil Diamond on stage. And I was disappointed in that part, Jamie.
The thing is, Karen, that you don't actually want to be with Neil Diamond on stage. You just want to be with Neil Diamond. Like, this is the thing we had to parse out while we were making the show. Like, what are things you want to do on stage? And what are things you just want to do? Like, we kept saying things like, oh, I want to, like learn sign language. It's like, well, no, you could just do that. Like, that doesn't have to happen on right. stage. Do you know what I mean?
In
like,
fact, you don't want people to watch you learn sign language. I don't get it.
Yeah.
This is taking years.
It had to be something that they wanted to do on stage. What I'm sad about, I have had this idea, and I think I've told Karen about it, but I've had this idea for years that I've wanted to, and we couldn't get it in the play, and I'll tell you why in a second. But the idea was, I've always wanted to have a scene on stage called Babies and Kittens. And in the scene, you have a baby brought on stage and a kitten brought on stage. And they're like in a little room, like a little set that is enclosed, like a playpen, so they can't escape. But the lights are on, and so we can see them. And you have two actors standing on the outside of it who are improvising the dialogue for the baby and the kitten in a dramatic scene or a comedic scene, whatever it is. Because everyone loves babies and kittens. Well, not everyone, but I do. I love babies and kittens. And
it's my company, damn it.
It's my company, damn it. And I've built all the spreadsheets, so fuck you, and I will do this.
I don't remember you ever telling me about this, and I am first in line to audition for that show. Oh, well, my Lord.
You'd be great at it. The challenge is, like, what happens if that baby starts crying or that kitten looks terrified? Like Babies and Kittens is, in principle, is a lovely idea, but if the audience starts worrying about that actual baby and that actual kitten's safety or like emotional well-being, I feel like the joy of it kind of might drop off a bit.
Okay. Yeah. So baby's mom and kitten's owner are in the theater, and the minute either one of them get uncomfortable, we see on stage that their owner mother goes and picks them up, and the actor steps into whatever crate they were just taken out of and takes their place.
Oh, that's funny. I like that. And then if they both have to be replaced, it's just one being a kitten and one being a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
Hopefully you get like 10 minutes of the concept of the show before that happened, but they might start crying right at the beginning.
I kept trying to write it into Sparkling, and I couldn't justify it as like an ethical human thing. But like one day I need to do a verb experiment lab on this topic, and just like, I need to find someone who has a baby and someone who has a kitten and just be like, can I borrow each of your beloved for a day?
Each of your thing.
But you did manage to bring something on stage live, didn't you?
Yeah, we brought in two live chickens.
Yep.
No, I need to double back on something first. I want I did the spreadsheet, so fuck you, to be a t-shirt. So fuck you, actually.
I did the spreadsheets. I applied for the grant. I filled out the KDAC forms, which is a very nerdy thing I just said, but what stupid shit we do.
All right, speaking of chickens, we have to get you to Bliss rehearsal, so there's no time to talk about the chickens. I would like to acknowledge that The Breakfast Dish is part of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The intro music you just heard and the outro music you're about to hear is by Alexandra Kalman. All graphic design for The Breakfast Dish has been done by Morgan Ermter. Karen, what else is going on this week?
The Washboard Union is on their Everbound tour, and they will play in Camrose on Friday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Lougheed Centre. You can go to camroselive.ca. This is an impeccable three-part harmony top-notch musician group, the Washboard Union. Also, Guandak Theatre, the only Indigenous-centered theatre company in the Yukon, is presenting free digital public performances of Women of the Fur Trade. It's going to be streaming digitally October 27th to November 7th. You can go to guandaktheatre.ca, GWAANDAKtheatre.ca, to reserve your spot. Looks like they have daytime and nighttime streaming shows.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Jamie. What? Give me the brass tacks, which, you know, is not a segment we're going to do on every show now. But since you're doing something and we're chatting with you, when does Bliss run? Where do people find it?
Yeah. So it runs at the Big Secret Theater, One Yellow Rabbit's Big Secret Theater in Calgary. It runs from October 28th, which is the preview, till November 7th. You can get your tickets at One Yellow Rabbit's website, which I think is OYR.org. Or if you want, you can go to verbtheater.com and get redirected there. And yeah, it's like it's a fun little piece. You have to be fully vaccinated to get in. But then once you're in, it's all fun, my babies.
You are right. It's OYR.org.
And you know we're going to be putting in some links in the podcast description. Who do you think we are? Like, I haven't got that shit down pat. Episode 53. You kidding? Jamie, thank you very much for joining us on The Breakfast Dish.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How we like to wrap up The Breakfast Dish is that Karen will ask a improvised question. It might have something to do with babies and kittens, but we didn't plan it, I promise you, before this episode or started recording. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, if you had to write a show for me and Neil Diamond, what would be the plot of it?
I think it would be an actual, you'd be playing you and he'd be playing him. And over the course of like an hour, you would be trying to convince him to actually marry you. Yeah. And it would get past the like initial, like, I'm a celebrity, I'm an actor, and I name myself after you. It would get past the initial like that stuff and get into like, how do two people form a bond? Like, how do you make a decision to form a bond with a person? And it would be like I think it would also have no music in it.
What?
Yeah, it would have absolutely none of his music. It would be about two people. This is based off of a concept that I'm trying to develop right now with Camille Pavlenko. And it's not real, but it might be real one day. About like a play about workshopping a friendship. Like, imagine bringing two people on stage who don't like each other. Like literal actors who really actually in real life don't like each other. And trying to workshop a friendship. Like saying, well, what's wrong here? Like, why isn't this moment working between us? And forcing people into a friendship.
Hi, this is the Neil Diamond's press agency. What costume will he be wearing?
Some sort of beaded shirt with sequins on it.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant like a shirt made out of beads, like a curtain, but in shirt form.
Oh, half of his shirts are practically that. And I may or may not have some of the beads from the shirt, from the first concert I saw him in.
Sorry, there's some tech thing going on. I can't. We're crashing.
You want to hear about when I picked up
the end of the episode is coming. I think I hear the outro music.
This has been The Breakfast Dish.